Good day, and welcome to Detroit Today. I'm 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson. And as always, I'm glad that you're joining us. Just for a minute, let's go back about 30 or 40 years to the mid to late 1980s when a very young Stephen Henderson is in middle and high school. I have this really vivid recurring memory of that time. Every day when I would get home from school, especially when I was in high school, I remember I would look up at the sky before I went into my house. And I would wonder, is this the day that we're going to have a nuclear war? I guess maybe I thought I would see nuclear missiles flying overhead if that were the case. And really, that was wondering about whether that would be the last day of human existence for an awful lot of people on our planet, and a fear that I might be one of them. This went on for years. In fact, I don't remember in high school ever not pausing to look up at the sky and wonder whether nuclear war might be starting that day. It was kind of a ritual I had after school. And it wasn't just this gesture. Popular culture, political discussion, all kinds of things in the 1980s were really focused on the idea that at some point, the United States and the Soviet Union would decide to resolve their differences by exchanging nuclear arsenals. Think of movies like War Games or The Hunt for Red October or the television movie The Day After, which really, I think, shocked the national conscience about what the consequences of nuclear war might be. But as I said, that's a really long time ago, and the Cold War has been over for 30 years. So for at least one entire generation of adults, that whole threat of nuclear war has not looked like that. I don't think kids today look up at the sky and wonder whether there's going to be a nuclear war. It's all kind of an abstraction. But the conversation about nuclear war has really changed in recent days. The Russian invasion of Ukraine suddenly poses real and terrifying questions about what escalation between Russia and the West could really mean. And new polling suggests a broad majority of Americans support imposing something like a no-fly zone over Ukraine, but many experts point out that no-fly zone is really just a nicer way of saying shooting down Russian jets. And think about what that would mean in terms of the relationship with Russia. Would that start a direct war? Would that implicate the nuclear arsenals that both countries have? This is also a reminder that even in the most peaceful of times, there are rockets with nuclear weapons pointed at us, and we have them pointed at others. It's still a reality. And none of this is to be alarmist. There has been plenty of that on social media lately, and there are some people, I think, who are being a little apoplectic about what we face. But today, we want to try to have a more level-headed conversation about what it means to live in a world with nuclear weapons and how Russia's invasion of Ukraine is shaping that reality. A little later in the show, we're going to talk with a media psychologist about how we can all cope with frightening realities like these in 2022, things that we have little or no control over, including nuclear proliferation. But first, I want to welcome someone who has long studied nuclear weapons and what they mean for all of our lives. Stephen Schwartz is a non-resident senior fellow at the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists and an independent consultant, editor, and co-author of the 1998 book, Atomic Audit, The Costs and Consequences of U.S. Nuclear Weapons Since 1940. Stephen Schwartz, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for having me on. I wish it were under different circumstances, but here we are.
Yeah. So as someone who's spent your career researching nuclear weapons, tell me how you're reacting to the Russian invasion of Ukraine and what you think it means for the possibility of nuclear war.
Well, I think, like a lot of my colleagues, the risk of nuclear war is low, but it's not zero. And the fact that we are now, well, not we, but the fact that Russia has invaded and is actively fighting in Ukraine, and that Vladimir Putin has issued multiple threats to NATO and the United States not to intervene, or else he will do things that can only be interpreted as using nuclear weapons, should give us pause. This is a low probability but high consequence event if it were to happen. But the probability is increased since the tanks and other military equipment rolled over the Russian border into Ukraine, and we can't rule it out. So although it's not something that I worry about happening, immediately, right now while we're talking, for example, mm-hmm. it's very much there in the background. And I worry about it less in the sense of either Russia or the United States actively deciding to use nuclear weapons. I worry about it more that we could stumble into something, as we did multiple times during the Cold War, and through miscalculation and accident, find ourselves using nuclear weapons when we didn't intend to.
So what is it about this particular action, this invasion by the Russians of Ukraine, that has people talking in terms that, as I said in the open, we really haven't heard a lot since the 1980s or maybe early 1990s. Lots of things have happened on the planet since then. There are nuclear actors in the world, and occasionally they do things that seem to be threatening other nations. What is it about this particular military activity that invokes that nuclear context in such a stark way?
Well, I think part of it is the newness to a lot of people. Like you said, this is something that a whole generation of people have not really had to think about. The Cold War ended, the Soviet Union collapsed just over 30 years ago. And with it, the incessant, for those of us of a certain age, the incessant coverage of nuclear weapons also ended. And, there was talk of a peace dividend, and Russia was becoming democratic, and we were signing arms control agreements, and there were even unilateral reductions of nuclear weapons by the United States and Russia. And people thought, wow, we came out of that, and nuclear weapons worked and kept the Cold War cold, and now we can, go on and have productive, peaceful lives. But the reality is that nuclear weapons didn't disappear. There are far fewer nuclear weapons in the world today than there were, let's say, in 1991, when the Soviet Union ceased to exist. By the count of the organization that I'm a part of and that I used to run, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, there were almost 50,000 nuclear weapons scattered around the world in 1991. And today, there are fewer than 14,000. But as the old saying goes, from the 1980s or maybe even before, one nuclear weapon can ruin your whole day. So I think people are perhaps surprised that we are where we are. I mean, when we talk about nuclear weapons, at least in this country, for the most part, it's in the context of concern about North Korea or Iran potentially getting a nuclear weapon. And I think the last time that we really were perhaps seriously concerned, and it was only for a relatively brief period of time, was in the first year of the Trump administration, when Donald Trump got into essentially a shouting match with Kim Jong-un in North Korea, and there were talks, you know, talk of fire and fury and all of that. And people got really concerned about what he would do, because after all, this was a man who had said that, you know, we have nuclear weapons, why can't we use them, among other things.
So I want to talk about Vladimir Putin and whether or not you consider him a rational actor. But I guess I want to put that question in the context of the detente, I guess, that existed in the 1980s between the United States and the Soviet Union. As fearful as I was as a teenager of the idea of coming home and discovering that this was the day that nuclear war was going to break out, there was this kind of understanding, I guess, that the idea that both the United States and the Soviet Union could destroy each other pretty easily was itself a deterrent to nuclear war, and that no rational person would start such a thing because it would mean the end of so much of the world. You know, fast forward to 2022, Vladimir Putin is not Brezhnev or Gorbachev or any of the names that we would remember from that era, but put him in that context, is he more irascible, perhaps? Is he less restrained than those former leaders? And is that part of the reason we should be afraid?
Well, I don't know him. I've never met him personally. I can only go by people, you know, who have and who have studied this. And I would note that in a recent interview in Politico, Fiona Hill, the longtime Russia watcher and former intelligence analyst, and of course, most people know her from Donald Trump's first impeachment hearing, because she worked in the National Security Council in the first year of his administration. You know, she said, and I'll just quote her here briefly, "The thing about Putin is, if he has an instrument, he wants to use it. Why have it if you can't?" And then she went on to say that, in fact, Putin has already, in a sense, used nuclear weapons by using highly radioactive materials to poison his enemies overseas. And he's, of course, made nuclear threats. So I think he's rational, but I think he's also getting very bad advice. And I think that he has also isolated himself so much. I mean, reportedly because of COVID, he basically stopped seeing a lot of people for the last 2 years. And certainly in the pictures that we've seen of him in the Kremlin in the last few weeks, he's literally keeping his distance from people. And so I don't think, and certainly that bizarre meeting of his national security team, where he essentially ordered them to tell him how good he was and how good this plan was to go into Ukraine, I think should give us all pause. I would hope that he's rational. He certainly hasn't done anything at this point that suggests he is completely irrational, but I would note that only rational people can be deterred. If somebody is irrational, if they're not operating within the bounds of reality, and they don't have any fear for their own personal well-being or the well-being of the people that they lead, no number of threats, you know, or anything that you can say to them will discourage them from doing whatever they want. And I think the problem that we face today is that the advocates, the proponents of nuclear weapons, have told us for decades that they are key to keeping the world at peace. You know, again, that the Cold War was kept cold by the threat of nuclear war. And the bargain is that we are prepared at any moment, as is Russia, to destroy the world, and that by being prepared to do so, we are in fact saving it from this terrible form of destruction. But the reality is that we're seeing right now is that far from making the world safe from war, we've in fact allowed war to happen under the threat of nuclear weapons. And Putin has issued threats, and the United States and NATO have, I think correctly for the moment, decided that, you know, whether or not he truly intends them, he has the capability, and therefore we cannot directly intervene in this war. We cannot establish a no-fly zone. We certainly can't send troops in to Ukraine, because doing so could very well set off, if not World War III, the use of nuclear weapons somewhere, which would be obviously horrendous. So nuclear weapons have not kept us safe from war. they have allowed, you know, they have allowed war to happen, and they will continue to until we do something about that.
Okay, coming up, we're going to continue this conversation about the possibility, the threat of some sort of nuclear conflict, and whether that is heightened by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. We want to hear from you as well. What has the idea of nuclear war meant to you, especially when you were growing up? Do you remember duck and cover drills in school? Did you internalize the real threat of nuclear weapons, maybe anticipate many days that it would be the day that nuclear war might start? And give us a little sense of how you're thinking of those things given the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Do you think nuclear war is more likely today than it was just a few weeks ago? Do you think it is more of a threat than it was in the 1980s and early 1990s? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to social media, Facebook or Twitter. Put comments there, and we'll work you into the conversation. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
Bringing you news that matters.
Stories that impact your life.
Music from the Motor City and around the world.
This is 101.9 WDET.
Detroit's NPR station.
This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. My guest right now is Stephen Schwartz, non-resident senior fellow at the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists and an independent consultant, editor, and co-author of the 1998 book Atomic Audit, The Costs and Consequences of U.S. Nuclear Weapons Since 1940. We're talking about the prospect of some sort of nuclear conflict, something we have lived with for a very long time on this planet. There have been other times in our history where I think we have felt more under threat from those things, but the Russian invasion of Ukraine, I think, is making a lot more people think about it in a more explicit way right now. Are you one of those people? Are you somebody who is now worried in a different way about the possibility of nuclear war because of the Russian invasion of Ukraine? Give us a call. Tell us how you're feeling. How are you processing all of that? Tell us what you think of the historical context here. Are you someone who remembers the times in the 1980s and 90s when it seemed nuclear war was just a moment away at any given point? How do you compare those times to these? What are you telling your children about nuclear war? I was a child in the 1980s, and I remember that all the things that I learned and was told about nuclear war really made me afraid. And I started the show talking about coming home every day and looking up at the sky before I went into the house, fearful that this was the day that nuclear missiles might be flying overhead. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Facebook or Twitter, put comments there, and we can work you into the conversation that way. Let's start with Mike in Grosse Pointe. Mike, what's on your mind?
Good morning. Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Hey, sure. Good.
First, I want to tell you that because of you, I increased my donations to WDET by 50%.
Oh, there you go.
I got the T-shirt, I got the hat, and now I got the drinking cup. So I can't live without this show. I'm surprised CNN hasn't stolen you away from us. So, however, turning to the subject at hand. So, you know, we have to read the signs. And Putin is a bully and a coward, but I don't think he's suicidal. And if you look at the way he's responded to COVID in the past 2 years, he has a heightened sense of self-preservation. Just sitting at the table 30 feet away from his advisors tells us that he doesn't want to die. And I really don't believe that he is willing to start a nuclear war, knowing that it's going to really increase the possibility of his own death or the destruction of his country. I think that he cares more about his own death than he does about the destruction of Russia. The Russian people are huge victims in all of this as well. Yeah. Now, I do think that in mind, the West may have misread things a bit, because this is a man who only understands force. And I don't know if he would have invaded if he would have thought that the West would come to the aid of Ukraine. So I just think that we need to look at the way he cares about his own life before we allow him to make threats that cause nations to fall. Because if he gets away with this in Ukraine, who's going to be the next victim?
Yeah.
Thank you, Stephen.
Mike, it's a great point. Both of your points are really, really interesting. I think one of the things you're pointing out is this kind of delicate tension between the idea of using force to push Russia back, but then also being mindful of the nuclear power that they do have and whether they might use it. Stephen Schwartz, I wonder what you make of that analysis.
I tend to agree. I think this is a terrible situation, first and foremost, for the Ukrainian people. And I think we should not lose sight of the fact that while we're talking about the potential destruction of, you know, of a nuclear weapon, that Ukraine is being destroyed by Vladimir Putin right now, piece by piece. So I think that's, you know, got to be in the forefront of our minds. But I don't think he will do anything that would deliberately cause these nuclear weapons, nor do I believe at this point that he intends to use them apart from threatening to use them, which is a form of use in and of itself. But again, there's the possibility of, he obviously intended for this war to go very differently. And there's a concern that he may, out of frustration, do something to accelerate it, which could then lead to something else, which, you know, might ultimately lead to, you know, a ratcheting up of the, you know, of nuclear threats. So, I think most people do not want to see nuclear weapons, you know, used. On the other hand, the reality is that both the United States and Russia have hundreds of nuclear weapons on constant alert, and we practice with them constantly. Of course, you know, Russia just did some exercises with them. Mm-hmm. We are fully prepared to use them, both of our countries, right away. So these are not just weapons that sort of sit around somewhere, you know, in a depot, although I would note that Russia's short-range battlefield nuclear weapons are, in fact, on a regular basis, all locked away. So that's the good news. But the weapons are out there. And, you know, that's part of the deterrent posture, is not just being able to say that I have these weapons and I will use them, but having them actually available, ready to use immediately. So that's, you know, we had that problem in the Cuban Missile Crisis, where we had, you know, Nikita Khrushchev try to sneak nuclear weapons into Cuba, got caught, and then, you know, got into a situation where we had a terrible crisis. And, you know, most people look at that situation and say, well, that was terrible, and that was clearly the closest that we've ever come to the use of nuclear weapons. And boy, it's a good thing we didn't. You know, Kennedy kept his cool. He didn't allow his generals to essentially bully him into using nuclear weapons or attacking Cuba in a way that, you know, Russia and the Cubans, who were in control of some of the sites, would have retaliated. But most people don't realize that at the very height of the crisis, there was one day when we could have actually had an accidental nuclear war three separate times, because of a stray U-2 spy plane that flew off course and went over Russia, because of a submarine that had nuclear weapons on board that we were harassing to try to force it to the surface, among other things. And, you know, it's really only because of luck, honestly, that nuclear weapons weren't used then. So I think we need to be even more careful now, even though there were far fewer nuclear weapons in the world today, which is a good thing, but there should be many, many fewer.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, Mike, really appreciate the call and your thoughtful comments. Let's go next to Tom in Taylor. Tom, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Hey.
It's nice to be on your show this morning. I was a TACAMO sailor. I'm not sure if you understand what that is. And prior to me becoming a TACAMO sailor in the Navy, I, I had no idea what it was. But the United States Navy has a series of aircraft that communicate via VLF, very low frequency, with the nuclear submarine force on a daily and currently, I think on an hourly basis with the submerged Ohio-class nuclear submarines. That's what I did in the Navy. And while I was in the Navy, we spent a lot of time thinking about nuclear war.
It would come with
the territory of working on such a system. And what we came to, the sailors that I was working with at the time, what we came to conclude is that every weapon that man has discovered, and think of those weapons like fire, the cold of winter, the heat of summer, sticks, the stones, we've used and continue to use to this very day to kill one another. Along came the knife and the spear, gunpowder, black powder, C4, guns, and we're still using all of those weapons this very day to kill one another, except one, and that's the nuclear weapon. If human history is to bear out, we will one day use those weapons to kill all of us at one point. Human history almost demands that we do that.
Yeah, yeah. Tom, I really appreciate your call, especially because of the experiences that you've had. That idea of inevitability, I think, is one of the things that's scariest about all of this. And it was one of the things that I think in the 80s and 90s really propelled, you know, fears for people was that if you have all of these things, if you have this capability, it's only a matter of time before somebody will use it. And then the question is what happens next? Stephen Schwartz, I wonder what you make of that kind of thinking around this issue.
There is no weapon in human history that has been built that has not been used. And of course, we have used nuclear weapons twice on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945. But we haven't since then, at least not by actively exploding them over an enemy's territory, and thank God for that. But there have been many times when, and not just the Cuban Missile Crisis, when we came very close to doing so. And I think what's so alarming about this situation for most people, beyond the fact that it's, you know, been 30 years since we've kind of dealt with this, is that there doesn't seem to be, you know, a great way out. Again, you know, Putin is this nuclear weapons have made the world safe for war, and this is a very potent example of that. You know, we can kid ourselves that we've somehow managed to get through, you know, the intervening period between World War II and now without another world war, and that's true. But lots of other wars have happened, and they've happened under the cloak, if you will, of nuclear deterrence on both the sides of the United States and Russia. So, you know, Putin is actively deterring us and NATO from getting involved, but he's also coercing us, or trying to get his way. And, you know, thank God for the brave Ukrainian people that are fighting for their very lives and their democracy. But I do tend to think that, yes, if we let this go on, you know, forever, or however long forever is, that the day will come when those weapons will be used. And certainly there have been some people already, you know, talking in not so veiled terms about, well, maybe we should use nuclear weapons if, you know, that we could fight a limited nuclear war and that we could get out of it, you know, as General Turgeon said in Dr. Strangelove, you know, without getting our hair mussed. And I think that's exceedingly dangerous. Nuclear weapons today in the United States are thoroughly integrated into our conventional force posture, such that there's not really a fine line between conventional and nuclear weapons anymore. And that was deliberate. And I get worried that if we get into an active shooting war with Russia or anybody else, that we could accidentally stumble into using these weapons. And then what happens? You know, how far will we go?
Stephen Schwartz, was really great to have you here with us to think through the nuclear threat that we all live with. Thanks so much for being with us on Detroit Today.
Thank you.
Coming up next, we're going to talk about how we cope with all the frightening things that are happening in our world, including the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the possibility of nuclear war. We're going to have a conversation with a University of Michigan professor and media psychologist about what we should be doing, how we should all be taking these things in. We want to continue to have you here with us on the show as well, on the phones and on social media. 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. You can also go to Facebook or Twitter and put comments there, and we'll work you into the show. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.